Morning. Am I on?
Yes.
Sounds like I'm on. All right, today we're going to be continuing our sermon series on shaping our lives in the manner that God wants. And in order to do that, over the next couple of months, we're going to be kind of settling down in Matthew chapters 5 through 7. That's the section of the Bible that's commonly known as the Sermon on the Mount. Now, the gospel according to Matthew is shaped in an interesting way. It has five large sections of teaching by Jesus. And the author Matthew kind of shows Jesus kind of functioning as Israel as a whole. We have Jesus, his birth, then he goes down into Egypt, comes back up out of Egypt, crosses through the Jordan and is baptized, gathers his followers around him, is tempted in the wilderness, and then he sits down just like Moses, and he begins to teach the people, just like Moses did in the book of Deuteronomy. And this particular sermon that we're going to be looking at is very interesting in that it says the crowds gathered around, but it's a very almost intimate type of doing things. That's why I'm gonna bring my little stool here as we kind of talk about this sermon, kind of looking at the way that Jesus structured things and what he was doing, in particular in the introduction. That's where we'll be focusing today. But what's the big idea in the Sermon on the Mount? And I think we got to capture this in our mind and hold it tightly as we look throughout this entire time together here. And what Jesus, I think, is trying to do here in the Sermon on the Mount is to say that, you know, God's future is breaking in the present, in the work of Jesus, and we, his followers, need to practice right here, right now, the habits of life of God's future. The habits of heaven need to be a part of what we're doing here and now. So let's jump into Matthew chapter 5, verses 1 through 20, which is the introduction. Now when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him, and he began to teach him. There's a particular translation of this that I really like. It's like Jesus sat down, took a deep breath, and began to teach him. It's almost like an intimate personal feel, even though it's in the midst of a large crowd. Began to teach them. And he said, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. For truly I tell you, until heaven and earth disappear, not the smallest letter, not the least stroke of a pen will by any means disappear from the law until everything is accomplished. Therefore, anyone who sets aside one of the least of these commands and teaches others accordingly will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever practices and teaches these commands will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven. That's quite an introduction. Basically, it's almost functioning like a funnel paragraph that you learned to write in junior high school, where the thesis statement shows up at the end, where Jesus is saying that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you'll certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven. Yeah, the habits of heaven, your righteousness must surpass the Pharisees and the teachers of Torah. So what's Jesus doing in this introduction? I think he's getting our attention. I kind of think of it as one of these things that happened to me about 5 or 6 years ago. I hate going to the doctor for my annual checkup. The whole prostate thing just kind of freaks me out. You want to know the truth? My wife, I complained 2 days before, and I complained a couple days after, and my wife was like, really? Try having 4 babies and the many, many probing things that occur. I'm in the doctor's office, and we just finished the worst part of the exam, and he's snapping off the glove. And he looks across the room at me, and I'm kind of recovering, just like I am right now, against the table. And he says, are you listening to me? And I said, yeah, of course I am now. He says, no, are you really listening to me? I said, yeah, I'm really listening to you. And he says, you're old. I said, yeah? He goes, no, you're really old. You got to change the way you're doing things. You just had your second knee surgery. They drained some fluid out of your elbow a couple months ago. You got to change the way you're doing things. Everything about you heals differently now. When you cut your finger, it takes more than a couple of days for it to close up. It's going to be a few weeks. You twist your ankle, it's not a few days, it's a few weeks, maybe even a few months. You got to start taking care of yourself. He did. He got my attention. Jesus is doing kind of something similar here in this introduction to his sermon. He's saying very, very stark things. And I want to look at each one of these phrases and look at how radical they are. We've heard them so many times. They just kind of flow over us. So I want us to back up here and look very, very carefully, because what Jesus is doing to those people who are sitting there on the mountainside with him is saying, are you listening to me? I've got really important things to say, and this is just very, 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 very different than you're normally hearing here. He says, blessed. And you can look in your bulletins there. Blessed, happy, fortunate, blessings on the poor in spirit. The kingdom of heaven is yours. Yeah, that word blessed doesn't come over into English real well. It's got to gather all of these things, like happy, and you're fortunate, and blessings to you. It's all of those things kind of gathered together. The kingdom of heaven. Kingdom of heaven is more an idea of when and what than where. Okay, kingdom of heaven's more a when and a what. And he's saying the when is now. And the what is God's rule and reign being made manifest in this world here and now. And then he's going to, throughout the rest of the sermon, show how that's happening. So he's saying, blessings on the poor in spirit, for the kingdom of heaven is yours. And that idea in spirit. Spirit is a word that has to do with everything about our connection with God. It's that life-giving element, that animated thing in us that connects to God. And what he's saying is, the poor in spirit, the kingdom of heaven is yours. Why would he say that? I think it has to do with the fact that poor people don't own anything. Poor people don't control anything about the relationship. They don't manipulate it. They're completely dependent. Blessed are those who are completely dependent upon God, who are come to God as if they're poor. And the relationship isn't one that we're grasping and trying to control and trying to clutch onto, but it's one that God moves in and God controls and God works with our lives. Blessed, happy, fortunate, blessings on the mourners. You're going to be comforted. It kind of echoes Isaiah 40. Jesus, I think, is wanting people to feel Isaiah 40. It's that primary passage that the folks in Israel would have grabbed onto. It starts with comfort. Comfort to my people. You know, life's hard. He didn't say mourning is over. He says the mourners are going to be comforted. Life's hard. Glennon Doyle Melton, who is the author of one of my very favorite blogs, it's the Mama's Theory blog. She just came out with a new book. It's fascinating, very interesting. She's coined a term called brutiful. Life is brutal and beautiful. And Jesus recognizing that, but going, you know, but the way of Jesus directs us, you know, and later in the sermon he shows, all right, but this is how my people are going to be bringing comfort to those who are dealing with the brutal full life, who are mourning. Blessed, happy, fortunate, blessings on the meek, for you're going to inherit the earth. You know, a few years ago, I was in the gym, and obviously I don't work out a lot in the gym, but I'm in there, and I do my best. I'm standing next to this monster of a guy, and he's going at it. I'm doing the lat pull, and I'm in the upper part of it, and he's doing this thing, you know, with bringing them together like this, and using way more weight going like this than I'm like that. That tells you how strong I am relative to this guy. Monster guy. Blazoned on his t-shirt are the words, "The meek will inherit," and in all capital letters it says, "Nothing." And I'm like, you are lightning bolt material, man. I don't know if I want to be near you. But I mean, you know, the meek will inherit nothing. And he's obviously a guy who's, you know, relying on his muscles. I mean, I'm at one of my kids' games a couple years ago, and one of the parents is wearing this t-shirt, and it says, I gotta read this. It says, "Trample the wounded, hurdle the dead, only the strong survive." And I was like, I came home, I said, Carol, our kids are really in a harsh world. I mean, this is the parents of the kids my kids are playing with. We gotta help them navigate this world. I mean, it's harsh. And, you know, a world where God says, you know, the meek are going to inherit the earth. It doesn't feel that way a lot. I mean, the Corn Ferry goes out on an executive search to pull in a CEO of a company. That company's board of directors doesn't come to them and say, okay, these are the list of qualifications we have for that CEO. Corn Ferry, go out and find the most meek person you can. I mean, that's why this is a prostate exam for the people who are hearing this, okay? I mean, it's just a different way of conceiving the world that Jesus says, that's my kingdom. You know, meekness, it's a hard concept for us to grab onto. Meekness is not weakness, okay? Meekness is not the opposite of strength. It takes strength to live meekly. Because how are we as Christians to become strong? In our weakness, in our dependence upon God. And Jesus shows us through the rest of this sermon what it means to be a meek person. I mean, I can't wait to go and see the new movie. I saw the trailer, 42, Jackie Robinson. I mean, I think, like I said, I haven't seen it, but I think that's a pretty decent example of meekness. That was a strong dude who changed the world through functioning in a meek way. Blessed are the meek. You will inherit the earth. Blessed, happy, fortunate blessings on people who hunger and thirst for God's justice, for righteousness. You're going to be satisfied. And justice and righteousness, it's a hard word to gather into our brains and to work with. Again, it's a tough word to bring over into English. The full meaning isn't really captured in one word, but it has to do with the healing of all relationships. Kind of putting things in the right way. The way things are supposed to be is what happens when we act righteously. When we act with full justice in the world. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for God's justice. You're going to be satisfied. Blessed, happy, fortunate, blessings on the merciful. You'll receive mercy yourselves. Unfortunately, our ideas of justice usually tack towards revenge. What does God say in the Old Testament there in Amos? You know, don't tell me about your sacrifices and your worship and what you do here on Sunday morning when you gather together. Show me mercy that you extend to other people. Show me when you're in a business meeting and your coworker, you know, steals your work and takes the credit for it. Show me your mercy. Show me your kindness. Show me you're turning the other cheek in that setting. Blessed, happy, fortunate, blessings on the pure in heart. You will see God. Your purity and purity of heart is this internal thing. It's the center of who you are. I think what Jesus is talking about here is we need to be people who kind of are undivided people. We don't have our private person and our public person. You know, when you are a light on the hill, shining on the hill, what comes out is not your public person that shines through the world. What bleeds out is the private person. Purity of heart is associated with the alignment of your private person and your public person together. And Jesus is saying, yeah, that's what we need to be about here. You will see God has to do with God's presence. God's presence then will be made manifest in the world when his followers, in both their private lives and in their public lives, live in alignment. They're undivided people. Blessed, happy, fortunate, blessings on the peacemakers. You'll be called children of God. Children of God is really the term for the true Israel. The true Israelites. And what God wants his people to be doing is bringing peace on earth. We're to be instruments of peace. Blessed, happy, fortunate, blessings on people who are persecuted because of God's way. Kingdom of heaven belongs to you. You know, again, following Jesus is not going to be easy. Blessed, happy, fortunate, blessings on you. Not if, but when people slander you and persecute you and say all kinds of wicked things about you falsely because of me. Don't have a pity party. Celebrate and rejoice. There's a great reward for you in heaven. Heaven's not a place. Heaven's a when and a what. Heaven's here and now. Reward for you here and now in heaven and how things happen in your community. That's how they persecuted the prophets who went before you. Again, it's tying us back into God's whole program. It hasn't changed from Moses till now. I mean, Jesus continually does that. You know, so where's this leading? You know, the Beatitudes are this introduction to the sermon, to the Christian virtues. You know, virtues are things that are developed over time. They're habits that we get. You can't do this stuff just jumping off the truck and starting to work. It comes through living together with people over time with practice, kind of a muscle memory thing. The reason we're to live this way is to flavor the world. Not to take over the world, to flavor the world. It's not an inward focus. Jeff, a couple weeks ago, last week, talked about our roots. Our roots need to be ones that kind of under the surface, spread out, and help the world. You know, he also claims that he came to fulfill Torah. All the commands, all the promises, the whole story was coming to completion in him. And how's that happening? The rest of the Sermon on the Mount, from this day forward when we gather here together, we're going to be looking at this description of living Jesus style. And it's with the basis of this thing called agape love. That's what fulfills Torah. It's this self-giving, sacrificial love. You know, Aristotle is a big virtues guy. But he never talked about agape. And our world really doesn't talk about it. We talk a lot about love, but we talk about contractual love. We don't use the word contractual love. We try to gussy it up and put syrupy stuff around it. But it's essentially contractual love. The love that Jesus talks about from this point on in this sermon is hard love. It's sacrificial love. It's love for the benefit of the other only. That's the love that he's talking about. That's how your righteousness surpasses the Pharisees and the teachers of Torah. The entire sermon is going to flow back. I mean, the sermon goes chapter 5. You've got, you know, violence, verbal and otherwise, marriage commitments. They need to be woven through with sacrificial love. Chapter 6, religious practices, giving, prayer, fasting. Need to be woven together with this sacrificial love. Treating others in chapter 7 as you would like to be treated is a sacrificial love thing. It's this one unified message of how to love and be loving to other people. I want to finish today with reading slowly something that Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. You've heard it a lot. But I want us to hear it and think about it in the context of the Beatitudes. You know, there's a real big kind of scholarly thing out there that talks about Jesus and Paul, and they're so different. No, they're not. They really aren't. And this kind of really highlights it. I mean, hear the echoes of the Sermon on the Mount in 1 Corinthians 13. If I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, regardless of what type of speech, if it's ecstatic worship speech, or if it's just normal communication back and forth. But do not have love, I'm only a resounding, useless gong or clanging cymbal. It's not going to sound good. If I have the gift of prophecy, of truth-telling, and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, I'm a smart guy. I have a lot of insights. if I have faith, this dependent belief that can move mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may boast, but do not have agape, self-giving love, love for the other, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. It doesn't envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It's not self-seeking. It's not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. But where there are prophecies, they'll cease. Where there are tongues, they'll be stilled. Where there's knowledge, it will pass away. For we currently know in part, and we tell the truth in part, prophesy in part. But when completeness comes, what is in part disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child, I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put away the ways of childhood behind me. For now we see only a reflection, as in a mirror. Then we'll see face to face God's presence. Now I know in part, then shall I know fully, even as I am fully known. This is my favorite part here. And now these three remain. Right, these are the things that are going to go into the kingdom forever. These three remain: faith, dependent belief, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. Let me close in prayer. God, thank you for this day that you've given us to live into your purposes in this world. I pray that you would help us as a community of people to love one another well and to love those outside of our community well. I pray that that who we are inside would be what it should be, and that it would light the world up with your love. I ask this in Jesus' name.